Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
si babky, kde to jsou jim hráči do babáry.
Last time I was here, that's what it was. Last time I was here, it was in December. I was asked to speak about the 50th anniversary. And I think I spoke from Markandeya Bhagavad Dharma, Prabhupada's arrival in Boston and the poem that he had written. And then I seem to recall, after I spoke about that, those who were present at the time were requested to give their support. And people came forward for offering financial assistance, and I think a substantial amount of donations were raised at that time for the 50th anniversary, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of ISKCON, and actually, but it's the 50th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's placing his two lotus footprints first on North American soil here in Commonwealth Pier, which is makes this a very significant place. And we spoke about that. And then I remember after that, I was approached by Vanamali. And who else was there? Was one other person who was also not here. Who?
Nitin.
Maybe it was Nitin. Is he here?
He's in India.
He's in India. Okay. I was approached by Vanamali and Nitin, and I asked if I could come. Next time I come, could I do something to help with this event? And I said, well, the next time I come may not even be until the event itself, so I don't know how much I could help. And then somehow between the beginning of our discussion and the end of the discussion, I made a decision to come again. Which is now. And then I said that I can speak about cooperation, unity, and I could try to speak about, give what I could offer in the way of hopefully some inspiration for the devotees who are going to be participating and organizing this event, because it's quite substantial, it's a major event, to give them the inspiration to work cooperatively together. Because actually, if we want to glorify Prabhupada and we don't cooperate, it's no one individual's task glorifying Prabhupada. There may be a main organizer, but it's not his show. But nonetheless, to really glorify Prabhupada doesn't mean that we simply speak some words in glorifying him, although that will be part of today's event, in which Jayavedha Maharaj will speak about Prabhupada. But another way, and an even more important way of glorifying Prabhupada, is by embodying that which he taught. Because if we can't embody that which he taught, then it's an empty message. Or at best, it's just it draws the audience to conclude that, well, Prabhupada was a great person, but and his message was pure, transcendental, his personality was perfect and complete, but somehow those who were left to serve his instructions and to fulfill his wishes and his desires weren't able to do what Prabhupada's greatest wish was before departure, to work cooperatively together, to spread Krishna consciousness, and to at least maintain that which he had given to us. So our behavior and our ability to cooperate is another way to glorify Prabhupada. And it's a very substantial way, especially if we make a big splash glorifying Prabhupada to the media, to the Westerners and to the non-devotees, and to invite them and encourage them to look what Srila Prabhupada did. And then people come and say, when I look empty temple, or what to speak of devotees not even cooperatively to organize the same event which is supposed to glorify Prabhupada. Right then and there, you send a mixed signal to the people that, you know, what makes it really attractive is that everybody is working together for the same cause, and the same cause is selfless devotional service to glorify Prabhupada. And our ability to be selfless and the desire to really to take up in a mood of service is what really gives an impression to people about the depth of Prabhupada's wisdom and the depth of Prabhupada's teachings and the depth of his personality. Is look at the society he created. Because that's what people see. Look, you see the society he created. And thus, can't be done by hiring those people who come and help you with your public relations?
PR firm.
And asking them, what can we do to create an image so that our movement has a better image? You know, you can't hire a PR firm. It's useless. I mean, that's just an image. That means the whole focus is on structure, but the substance is not there. So if we just simply focus on structure and without substance, then people are going to see through that very quickly. It doesn't take long. The substance is how much Srila Prabhupada's teachings mean to us. And how much we practice those teachings in our dealings with each other. How much do we embody his example that he showed us of compassion, tolerance, mercy, kindness, and determination. I was just speaking, I think it was the Jayadvaita Maharaj the other day, when I was speaking a reference from Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, where he explains that following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas has to be three important features. If they're not there, then there's no question of being able to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And he said those three features are determination, complete determination to serve the Supreme Lord despite any obstacles. The other was to constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord, to always take shelter of the holy name of the Lord in all circumstances. And the third was compassion. And he said if those three features are not there together, collectively, then there will be a deviation from our sampradaya. They have to be there. They're the symptoms. What does it mean to follow in the footsteps? Determination to satisfy the Supreme Lord in our efforts to satisfy Srila Prabhupada, and taking shelter of the holy name, which is another example that we have to show others what Srila Prabhupada gave us, is that he gave us the holy name, so we have to teach others that what does it mean to take shelter of the holy name, because that's Prabhupada's first and foremost instruction to his followers. In fact, he said it's the most important instruction. It's even more important than anything else. It's chanting the holy name of the Lord. And then compassion. And compassion also means, well, to have compassion for someone is not simply compassion for the external or for the dress of a Prabhupada gives the example in Bhagavad Gita, simply to have compassion for the dress of a drowning man is not real compassion. Compassion for the drowning man is to take the man out of the ocean and rescue him. So in the same way, compassion is not simply for the physical body, but compassion means to increase faith in others in pure devotional service. That's compassion. To increase faith in others doesn't simply mean putting on a show, It means showing what will increase faith is our ability to embody Srila Prabhupada's teachings and to execute it in a way that's Krishna conscious and for his pleasure. For his pleasure. It's not for my pleasure, it's not for anyone else's pleasure. If we do it for Prabhupada's pleasure, you know, it's solid. It's solid. That's a formula for success. You don't lose. It's win-win. If it's Prabhupada's pleasure. Because this, and Prabhupada, in part and parcel of Prabhupada's pleasure is to, he wanted us to cooperate amongst ourselves. And the best way to cooperate, of course, is to set aside our own personal agendas and try to really do something that will be very pleasing to Prabhupada. That's, I feel, the kind of inspiration that needs to be there to put on an event of this magnitude, which is not just a Ratha Yatra festival that many people have done many times. You know what to do, you know everything. This is a first-time event that you're doing. And many of us won't live for another one. This is the 50th anniversary. Then what's the next one is probably the 100th. You know, I'm not going to be around. I know. This is it. We really want to make it an event that glorifies Prabhupada. And if we really want to make an event that glorifies Prabhupada, we should get our consciousness together and work in a cooperative way so that we can really glorify Prabhupada, not only with fanfare, with big, you know, billboards and external things, but we can really glorify him with substance by our own behavior and being his followers, so that they can see Prabhupada through us. They should see Prabhupada working through us, his followers. That's glorifying Prabhupada also. And Prabhupada, of course, gave a lot of his blood and his determination in helping us to understand this principle for the future of our Krishna consciousness movement. And although it's been how many years? Almost 40 years since he departed, we're still, fortunately, a movement, and we're still together. But that's not just the responsibility of the leaders, it's the responsibility of the followers as well. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam, Krishna speaking to the four Kumaras, when he says that a wrong act committed by the servant leads people in general to blame the master. Just as a spot of white leprosy on any part of the body spoils all of the skin. Right? He's speaking of the four Kumaras apologizing for the behavior of Jai and Vijay. He said, they're my servants. They claim to be my servants. They treated you like this? I have to come personally to apologize. They did this to you? The Lord had to come personally to the four Kumaras to apologize because they claimed to be his servants. And he said that a wrong act committed by a servant, somebody who claims, I'm the servant, I'm Prabhupada's servant. You commit a wrong act, then it leads people in general to blame the person who gave the instructions, the master. So we have to take that into consideration, that if we want to glorify Prabhupada, then we have to try to be careful not to commit a wrong act and misrepresent him and misrepresent the sampradaya that he preserves as the founder acharya of the Krishna consciousness movement, because he embodied compassion, determination, and always chanting the holy name of the Lord. He embodied it. He kept the sampradaya intact for us. And now it is our duty extend that same mood to compassion, chanting, and determination. Awaken people about Srila Prabhupada's true glory. So it takes a lot to organize, as I said, an event of this magnitude. And I remember even, although it made me think of our festival, that, for instance, that we organize in Ukraine, although it may not be comparable because the Ukraine festival is not a one-time event. And every year, except for last year because of the war, it didn't go on. But we're going to resume it this year. But it started with a concept. And the concept was to bring people together to hear about Krishna. And then at one point we decided that the real concept of this festival was, yes, to bring people together to hear about Krishna, but also to serve the Vaishnavas. Vaishnava Seva. And then when that concept was planted in the minds of the devotees that we're going to organize a festival where nobody gets any personal benefit from it. You know, because sometimes when you have a lot of people coming, then people have to, you know, pay for the event, and then people start thinking, well, this is a way to make money. We cut that out, and we made the event as an event where people didn't have to even pay. It's Vaishnava Seva. And let them come and without paying any festival fees. And then we did that one year, and then we did it the next year, and it was a little difficult in the beginning, but then the devotees started to get a little taste of Vaishnava Seva, and they said, let's cut away the prasadam expenses. We won't even charge for prasadam, and let people just give whatever they want. Let them just donate whatever they want. And then gradually more people started to come. And because they were thinking, wow, this is, you know, free festival for 5 days. Good prasada. Good sangha. But then what happened was, is because the mood of the festival was Vaishnava Seva, the core group of devotees started thinking of different ways of how to serve and to please the Vaishnavas and to please the senior Vaishnavas, who are actually the whole reason for organizing the festival, because the senior Vaishnavas were coming to give their association to the devotees, and they wanted to please them by facilitating their katha. And then a lot of the people that started to come started to become very attracted, like, why don't we do something to help? And then after, you know, so many years of doing it that way, like, as many of you know, that, you know, 2 years ago, not last year, as I said, but 2 years ago, 12,000 people came to the festival. And there were no fees. There were no festival fees. There were no prasadam fees. And some of the people were coming to the festival just simply for an opportunity to do some service. And not only that, they were giving donations to the festival so that they could serve. They became inspired because the mood was cooperation. The mood was cooperation, and this is what attracts people to come and to take part, because it's a cooperative effort. And devotees aren't looking anything for themselves. And the seed was just simply Vaishnava Seva. That's all. That was the seed. I tell this story. It's one of my favorite stories that I tell. But I might have even told it. I can't remember here before. It was 2 years ago. The way it's organized is that Every day, a different yatra takes responsibility for cooking prasadam. So a yatra consists of several temples, and the congregation, they get together, they buy the bhoga, they prepare the bhoga, they cook it, they serve it out, they clean up, and they do everything for the day, and then the next day another yatra takes responsibility. Because it's 12,000 people. You imagine, there's one devotee who has to do it every day. He makes bread rolls, 25,000 a day. 25,000 a day. It's not a small thing. So anyways, I went into the kitchen one evening, and I went into the pot room, because there's a lot of serving buckets and serving containers and everything else that were there. And it wasn't so late in the evening, but the room was probably almost as big as this temple room. It was filled with barrels, buckets, serving containers. And the devotees were at the sink washing. They had been out there all day, because there's three meals a day. There's breakfast, lunch, and there's even prasadam in the evening. And I came up to the devotee who was like drenched in front of the sink, you know, washing the buckets. And I pat him on the back. I said, Prabhu, is everything okay? Is there anything that you need? And he looked at me and said, I have a problem. I said, oh, what is it? They're only going to let me do this one day. That was his problem. I said, really? He said, yeah, they change yatras every day. I can't do it tomorrow. I said, that's your problem? Yeah. He said, Maharaj, is there some way you can make an arrangement that they'll let me do this tomorrow too? After he'd been washing pots like since the morning all the way to the night, nonstop. You know, that's just Vaishnava Seva. You know, it's the person's, you know, example, the person's in the background. They were like, I think it was between 1,200 and 1,400 devotees who just stayed in the background and made all these different arrangements to serve the Vaishnavas. Many of them didn't even get to 10 lectures, although all the main organizers were practically at every event, because cooperation. It takes cooperation to host an event for 12,000 people for 5 days, not just one day, for 5 days. And then not only that, but when all the guests are leaving, they cook prasadam for everybody to take on the trip wherever they're traveling to for the day that they leave. Everybody gets a bag, prasadam. They get driven to the train station, to the bus station, wherever it may be. And so because that kind of spirit is there, the local people, this is in a place called Yevpatoria in Crimea. Unfortunately, we can't do it in Crimea anymore because it's no longer part of Ukraine. But the local people started to come, and they saw like the mood. And, you know, last time, not last year, but the year before, many of those local people who saw the event were sitting in the fire yajna getting initiation. Chanting 16 rounds, following the principles. In other words, the event is attractive because it's a spirit of, I mean, I'm sometimes a little afraid to speak about it, because who knows, if I speak about it, then maybe it won't happen again. But it's been going that way and for quite a few years, and just the seed was serve and don't expect anything. Don't expect glory. Don't expect money. Don't expect appreciation. Just serve, because it's pleasing to Krishna. It's pleasing to Prabhupada. And if we keep that kind of attitude, at least for this one time event, there's a short somewhere. That's, at least that's what I hope all of you who are here to hear about Prabhupada's 50th anniversary, I hope that you can try to take up a similar spirit and come together and work together and glorify Prabhupada, not just by, you know, of course, we hope Yadubar Prabhu's movie will be done by that time. I saw the trailer in Mayapur this year, and he's working to get it done in time for this festival. Even right in his trailer, he says this: he wants to debut the festival, the movie, on September 19th, or whenever it is, in Boston. So that will be there to glorify Prabhupada. But we want to bring people there and to attract people and many people to get the opportunity to come in contact with Prabhupada's followers and to appreciate who is Srila Prabhupada. Look what he has done. That's for all any follower of Srila Prabhupada, you can take part fully by demonstrating what Srila Prabhupada has done, by exemplifying what he has taught. And it's a once in a lifetime chance. Don't lose it. That's all. That's my humble appeal. Don't lose it. You've got to start now. Please don't wait until September 17th to start discussing about getting things together. I organized Rath Yatra every year for 13 years. I started organizing Rath Yatra the day after Rath Yatra. That makes sense? What Rath Yatra was I organizing? The next year's Rath Yatra. The day after Rath Yatra. It's the way we started to do it. The day after Rath Yatra, I started organizing the Rath Yatra for the next year, and then during the year. And then everybody knows what they're doing. Because I had too many experiences of having a big Rath Yatra festival. Going out, Lord Jagannath made it, but sometimes no kartos, no mridangas. Sometimes Lord Jagannath didn't make it also. Or he was late. But last minute details just like falling through the cracks, because it just wasn't planned. Systematically, ahead of time, everybody knew what they were doing, and then all of a sudden you see everything closing in, crushing in, and so many things fall through the cracks just before the event because you didn't stay focused on the event. Don't wait to September, please, 17th, and start thinking how you can contribute. Now is the time to plan. Now is the time not only to plan time, energy, and what you're going to do, but it's time to plan to take part in all future meetings also, so that you can all be a part of something very wonderful to glorify Prabhupada. That is what I ask, my humble appeal. That was my message I wanted to make today. And Jayadwaita Maharaj is going to speak about Prabhupada. He'll give the substance, I gave the form. Huh? I can? Okay.
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare 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 I feel pretty good about myself today because many of the things that I had in mind to say, or the main things I had in mind to say, Niranjan Maharaj has said. So that makes me feel like I'm not too far off the mark. Maharaj has spoken about the importance of Prabhupada's teachings and living those teachings, which is usually what I think about. Everybody wants stories and pastimes, and I usually think about more about these kind of issues, how we do what Prabhupada told us to do. And Maharaj has spoken about the importance of seva, serving Krishna, and especially serving the Vaishnavas. And another theme, he kindly left something for me to talk about, is that Srila Prabhupada never thought small. Prabhupada said, did he say this is my disease? He said something like this, this was his problem, this was his disease, I could never think small. An example, a very prominent example, that is Prabhupada's coming to America. His godbrothers were mostly felt very good about their accomplishments if they could build a mat, build a temple, and attract some devotees to serve in the temple. And they could maybe from there extend out and do some preaching. They felt like they were. And they were following. Following what their Guru Maharaj had said to do, but on a small scale. And Srila Prabhupada wasn't thinking small. When one of my godbrothers told me that when he first came to the temple at 2nd Avenue, Prabhupada's quarters, you know, were in the back, and there was the storefront in the front. And to get to the quarters in the back, you went through this hallway, and there was a little buzzer there that you had to, well, there were buzzers for each apartment, you buzz and you get let in. And next to Srila Prabhupada's buzzer, there was a tag, as there was for everyone, and it said International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This was like 1967 or something. And this, the whole thing was Prabhupada and a few ragtag hippies. And this devotee was thinking, what International Society for Krishna Consciousness? Just Swamiji and the Swami and these few people. He kind of got a chuckle out of it. But Prabhupada was thinking in terms of an international society. He came to America, which was already a huge thing. You know why Prabhupada came to America, by the way? What Prabhupada said? He said that my Guru Maharaj sent some of my godbrothers to England, but they couldn't accomplish anything. It was a failure. So I thought, well, at least if I'm going to fail, let me fail in a new place. So Prabhupada came, that's one reason why Prabhupada came, why he came to America. But that already was a huge thing, to come to America. Prabhupada wound up in Butler, Pennsylvania. And there was a family there, and they were seeing to his basic necessities, and he was speaking at the local YMCA and meeting a few people. But Prabhupada thought, no, the action is in New York City. And so, with nothing, he just went there, because that was the big place. Prabhupada was was thinking large. Before coming to America, he'd been working on the Harmonist, I think, before there was Back to Godhead, working on one of those Patrikas under the in service to one of his godbrothers. So the godbrother was sort of content, have a little publication and turn out some few copies. And Prabhupada was thinking always how to improve it, how to make it big, how to do something. And there was sort of incompatibility there because Prabhupada was the only one who was thinking big. The person in charge was thinking status quo. Maintain the status quo, maybe improve the status quo a little bit. But Prabhupada was thinking how to do it bigger. When he came to America also, he started the Back to Godhead. He spent the whole treasury to buy a couple of like mimeograph presses. And the devotees were publishing the Back to Godhead and coming out irregularly with the magazine. But Prabhupada, thinking big, was thinking about how it should be done in color, how it should be done in thousands of copies. He was even thinking, he said, I'm looking for the day when it will be like Life magazine, or back in those days, Illustrated Weekly, which is like Illustrated Today is, like India Today is today, in the matter of its popularity. And so Prabhupada went from, the few hundred copies they were printing, Prabhupada negotiated with Dainapan how to print, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, something like that. And then, okay, you take this many, you take this many, you take this many, and you take this many to the temples. How to do it larger. So he was thinking big. That's one thing. And the other side of it is he wasn't thinking just a small group. He was thinking how to expand, how to go beyond that small group and reach out. In New York, I remember we were thinking that the Krishna consciousness could be attractive to the hippies. If a person was a hippie, that meant he was kind of like, well, we'd say now today broad-minded, but back then it was like expanded minds. So if you had an expanded mind, then you could be receptive to Krishna consciousness. And so we should approach those people. Even Prabhupada himself had said that the hippies were our best customers. So we were thinking about approaching those people. And we actually thought it would probably, it wouldn't really go beyond them because they were the people who could understand it. I said that one time and Satsrup Maharaj sort of one-upped me. He said, we didn't want it to go beyond them. If the straight people got it, they'd ruin everything. We wanted to keep it within our little community of the people that we were comfortable with or that we were part of or familiar with and expand it within those boundaries and not really have it go beyond that. Apart from which we wouldn't have had any much of an idea of how to go beyond that. We were thinking small in that way, looking within a small orbit. Prabhupada had been going to had started the Sankirtan in Tompkins Square Park. And then he told us that we should go on Sankirtan, Kirtan party, chanting every day. Even those who were working in the publishing department, he said, you must go out at least 1 hour. At the time Prabhupada gave that instruction, I think we hadn't yet come to Boston. ISKCON Press was in New York at that time. And Prabhupada, whatever there was, there were just a couple of devotees. We were in New York. And Prabhupada said every day we should go out chanting. That even those who were working at least an hour a day. And then he said, and you should distribute books. Prabhupada had published teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and basically was sitting, however many copies had been ordered, were stocked. We had them on the bookshelf, and we'd ask people to take them and distribute a few copies here and there. But Prabhupada, first he told us that we should, when we went out for kirtan, we should distribute the Bhakti Godheads. He said, every gentleman will give a quarter, 25 cents. And then after we'd been doing that for a while and found that we actually could distribute magazines, that you should distribute books, which was like, you should climb Mount Everest. How do you get a person, how do you sell a book to a person? 25 cents is one thing, but to get a person to take a book. But that was Prabhupada's instruction, that when you go out with the kirtan party, you should distribute these books also. And you just approach people and ask them to take a book. And the rest he left up to us, how to do that. And so when we came up here to Boston, that's what we were doing. The press devotees, the press became quite a big thing, actually. They got that house in Alston, North Beacon Street. Big house, former mortuary, undertaker's place, funeral home. And the Prabhupada also gave a check for the press. And so it became a big crew. The painters were there, the artists, and the typists, and the transcribers, and the press workers. But Prabhupada said we should go out every day. And we did. We would go out, all pile into a van, and we'd go out to Boston Common and chant for at least an hour. And then we get back to the press. And it actually enlivened our whole day. We got more done because we went out and chanted, not less. If we got in for 2 hours, we'd probably get still more. Then, as you know, the book distribution became a huge thing. And devotees were distributing hundreds of copies. One devotee would distribute hundreds and hundreds of copies of books every day. And Prabhupada, in his usual fashion, was expressing some pleasure and telling us that we should do twice as many. That the scores were nice, but we should double. Or he would say, now it's very nice, now the next thing is you should distribute sets of books. How do you distribute sets of books? That was the next challenge. You should distribute sets of books. So Prabhupada was thinking always larger, 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 and reaching out. In the context of this 50th anniversary event, the one lesson that can be drawn is that it's not just for us. It's not just for us. We can, if we put our minds to it, we can have a very nice festival and have devotees come from all over Boston, all over the Northeast, and other places. And we can have a very nice family picnic. That's not wonderful. If we reach out further, so many Indian people will come. We can appeal to them that he's Prabhupada's an Indian sadhu, and this is Sanatan Dharma, and so many ways we can reach out to the Indian community, and then we'll have so many Bharatiya attending the festival. Devotees and Indians. Generally in America these days, devotees, it's almost synonymous if devotees means Indians. Because we're thinking within that small circle. Big circle, actually. Now so many Indians have come to America. Krishna's mercy. On us, if not them. That is to say, on our American movement, if not on the Indians who have the misfortune to find themselves in the United States. But our goal should be how to push beyond those boundaries. It's not that Indians are the new hippies. Prabhupada used to say the hippies are our best customers. Manel said the Indians are our best customers. And we stop there because we don't need to go further than that, or maybe we don't want to go further than that. If the other people get it, what will they do with it? They'll mess it all up. But we should be thinking very broadly how thousands and thousands and millions of people should hear about Srila Prabhupada, hear about Srila Prabhupada's message, understand the importance of Srila Prabhupada's teachings and his contributions in so many spheres, socially, intellectually, theologically, in every department of life, Srila Prabhupada's teachings are relevant. And therefore the leading persons actually are meant to understand these things. Yad-yad-acharati shreshtas, tad-tad-eveta-rajana. The leading persons, Evam Parampara, Krishna said, I spoke to Vibhishan, not to one of the little thumb-like personages who accompany the chariot as the sun moves around its orbit. He spoke to the headman in the sun, Vibhishan. The headman and the head planet, Rajas Samastu Suramurti Rishesha. Of all the planets, the sun is the number one planet. Of all the people on the planet, the sun god is the chief man. Krishna spoke to him. Then it descended in the Parampara system. So we're meant to reach the leading people. They should understand. Even Srila Prabhupada himself, in later years, he was asking the devotees to arrange for him to meet with leading people. I know in England and in Germany they did that with fair amount of success. Prabhupada met with leading men. One time there was some program somewhere in India, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was inviting Prabhupada or asking Prabhupada to come. And Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I think maybe, what's that thing called, telegrammed him back, that you speak if mass, I'll speak if class. Now if you're just reaching a big mass of people, you can handle it. And if it's high class of people, leaders of whatever city it was, then I'll come and speak. Then I'll come and speak. That means problems, that's another dimension of big. One big is numbers, and another big is high, up high, those who are leaders, thinking big. In one sense, our limitation is that we don't think big enough. I'm reading these days about publishing and books and getting your book out, and people, one of the things you do is you get endorsements from people, yes, the book is nice, I recommend this book. And the the consistent advice across the board that they give to authors is, don't think small. Whoever's the top person in your field, go to him. Whoever the top people are, send your book to him and ask for endorsement. Because if you don't ask, you don't get. Prabhupada one time, several times said, some professor of his had said, or some teacher had said, that if you try for a B, you'll get a C. You know, if you try for an A, then, you know, maybe you'll get a B, maybe you'll get an A. But if you try for a B, the best you'll get is a B. And more likely you'll get a C. So thinking how to, even I had another person, he's a friend of mine, he's an expert in fundraising. And he gives seminars on raising funds for different worthy groups. So he gave one such seminar, a small group of people, 20 people or so. And he asked a question. He said, how many of you here have ever gotten a donation of $1 million? And one woman raised her hand. Then he asked, how many of you have ever asked for a donation of $1 million? The same woman raised her hand. So Prabhupada was thinking that way, not, well, I don't know if they'll, he's writing to Mahatma Gandhi, he's writing to the president of India, he's writing to, you know, people that, you know, why should they care about Prabhupada? He's a sadhu who basically hardly could afford a decent set of cloth, and he's writing to them and telling them that they should give up everything and surrender to Krishna, or that they should learn the science from him and spread it all over the world because they're people of note. Why should they pay him any attention? But Prabhupada thought that way, how to, as he put it, shoot the rhinoceros. You've heard about that? Shooting the rhinoceros? Yeah, Prabhupada said it's one of those safari things. If you're going to go hunting, then you should shoot for the rhinoceros. Because, you know, one of the big five, I think they call them, you know, the lion, the tiger, the elephant, and the rhinoceros, so big game animal, rhinoceros. When you go hunting, you should shoot for the rhinoceros. Because if you bag it, then, oh, he shot the rhinoceros. And if you don't, they'll say, well, anyway, it was a rhinoceros. That was Prabhupada's. Even one time, book distribution was going on full scale, like huge, and we were in airports all over America, and just like tearing up the airports. Every place you went, there were devotees approaching practically every traveler there was. And we were an airport manager's nightmare. You're trying to just run an airport and get people in and out and the planes and the traffic and this, that. And you've got a band of like determined book distributors out there whose mission in life is to see that everybody gets a book. It's not really what you have in mind. So we were definitely not the fun part of their agenda as far as they were concerned. And the main place that the biggest airport in the country, maybe still is, was O'Hare, the airport in Chicago. O'Hare Airport, enormous airport. So all the airlines that are doing hub and spoke, who are feeding you into one place and then feeding you out from there to some other place, the main hub is Chicago. Enormous. So devotees were in Chicago Airport every day, and they were coming from around the country to distribute books in Chicago Airport. The leading book distributor at that time was one devotee, Tripurari, maybe Tripurari Swami at the time, I don't remember. And Prabhupada told him he should approach the airport manager and tell them, ask him that they should please rename the airport Oh Hare Krishna Airport. And Tripurari did, he approached them. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. So they haven't yet renamed the airport, but time is on our side. So as Prabhupada thought in so many ways, big. So Boston is one of the most important places, one of the most important cities intellectually. It's a hub of, still a place of learning, a first place of education, a place also of commerce, a place of historical importance. So Boston, and a place where Prabhupada, and above all, the place where Prabhupada came, somehow or other, of all the places he could have come, he, by Krishna's arrangement, he came first here to Boston, and by another Krishna's arrangement, you're all here. So that's an opportunity for service, how to make Srila Prabhupada known. Actually, Boston is important because Prabhupada came here. All that other stuff, American Revolution and all those other things, they're of less importance. Even America itself will come and go. It's temporary. It's not going to last forever. And the values for which it stands, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, are fairly small time. Not fairly small time, they are small time. How to stay in this world under the influence of illusion and pursue life where you can't live, liberty where you can't be free, and happiness in a place which is certified as Dukkhalaya, a place of misery. Very wrong-headed idea. So Prabhupada gave the right idea, that real life means to live forever. Real liberty means to be free from birth and death, free from disease and old age, free from conditioned life. And real happiness means to be eternally connected with Krishna and devotional service. So these are the most important ideas. They're revolutionary ideas, they're great ideals, are what we look at and call Maya. We would have said to George Washington, "Sir, you're in Maya." Who was that other? Patrick Henry? No, it wasn't. Who was it? Nathaniel Hale. Great American patriot. I regret he was hanged by the British, but before then, his last words, "I regret that I have but one life to give for my country." An illusion. I have but one life. You've got so many damn lives, fool. But you're thinking you have only one, and even if you only have one, you want to give it for your stinking country. Poma Ijati. What is that? Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke swadhi kalatradishu pomli vidhi yatirta buddhis shaline nakarichit janeshvapigeshu sayavagokara. Great patriot. We have to read about you in history books. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, you're no better than a cow or an ass. Because you're thinking you're this body, this bag of mucus, bile, and air is yourself. That these are your kinsmen. That this chunk of dirt is worshipable, is worthy of dedicating your life for. And you're neglecting the real business of life, spiritual realization. So, and those were in the glory days where they actually believed in all that stuff. Now it's just, you know, throw up words about democracy and freedom and our American way of life, and it's all just like how we grab the world's money and resources and enjoy gross sense gratification. Well, that's called misled. The world is misled. And Prabhupada wanted to create a revolution in the lives of a misdirected world civilization. He wanted to create a revolution in the lives of a misdirected world civilization. That requires dedication. On the other side of Nathan Hale, you know, handed to him, man underwent serious tapasya, or serious sacrifice for the thing that he considered important. It was the wrong thing. George Washington and his ragtag gang, you know, traipsing around the woods and middle of the winter. But they succeeded. They drove out the British Empire. They drove them out by determination. One of those three things that Niranjan Maharaj mentioned, determination. Gandhi and crew drove the British out again from India by determination. So that also is needed. Even Castro, he's not in our American Revolution pantheon, but he had his own revolution. He drove out the Americans. And you can read about him, how he was just like on his own with a few guys, and they were just sleeping wherever, and with their rifles pointed to their mouths at night, so that if they got captured, they could pull the trigger. Serious sacrifice. Again, not for the highest purpose. So, but if they could sacrifice for these lower ideals, how much can we sacrifice to spread the message of Krishna and to spread the glories of Sri Prabhupada? It doesn't happen automatically. It doesn't get accomplished by casual effort. If they just thought it would have been a good idea for the British to leave America and go home, leave the colonies and go home, it wouldn't have worked. It needed dedication, sacrifice, austerity, hard work, determination, persistence, a refusal to take no for an answer. We just kept on. And intelligence also, those who were students of American history, it wasn't just all determination and guts. There were serious strategies and plans and intelligent people using their intelligence. So these things are wanted. How to do something, Prabhupada said, strain your brain, how to do something big for Krishna. That was a phrase of Prabhupada, strain your brain. Strain your brain. Didn't mean just cook up mental concoctions, but always think, how to do this. Somehow or other, how to do this. Strain your brain. Even Prabhupada would criticize us if we would. He would ask us to do something big. And if we would say, but Prabhupada, he would say, then what is the use of your being American? America is supposed to be the greatest country. Americans are so intelligent and resourceful. What is the use of being American? We were publishing, it's famous, of course, we were publishing a book once every 2 months. A full hardbound book, which meant it went from raw manuscript to finished product in 2 months. And we thought that was quite respectable. But we were way behind Prabhupada, we were on the beginning of the fifth canto. And Prabhupada had already finished fifth canto and practically completed Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, two volumes of Adi Lila, seven volumes of Madhya Lila, five volumes of Antya Lila, sitting there, not done, not practically not started. Fifth canto, I think not even started. So Prabhupada came to Los Angeles. The press had moved from New York to LA. And we had a good crew then. We sort of developed quite a good crew in New York. And we'd gotten new typesetting equipment also back then. Now what we had would fit on somebody's laptop. But back then it was a big thing. Photo typesetting had just come in to full, was the cutting edge really. Before then it was linotype, which meant letters made out of hot metal and pressed into letters as you go. This is too high and it's feeding back. And we had these little IBM composing machines, which are a story in themselves. But anyway, is someone able to fix this so it doesn't...
He's working on it.
Okay. So we bought this photo typesetting machine. I think it was about $18,000, which was serious money for us back then. It was more serious money for everybody back then, but for us especially, it was serious money. And it was the computer was a tower, the height of a man, and it had all these flashing lights and buttons for directly entering values into registers. And it had, we'd splurged a little so that we added an extra memory board. It was like this big, 8K. We had, anyway, it was quite a setup that we had in Los Angeles. It was really good. So Prabhupada came to LA and toured the press. And the arrangement was that everybody would be at their battle station. You know, everyone would be at their workstation. Everybody would be sitting or working at what they normally do. And Prabhupada would come see. And Radhavala, the press manager, Prabhupada, this is such and such, and he's doing such and such, and over here we're doing such and such, and showing Prabhupada how they do the page makeup on light tables. You know, no one even knows what a light table is now. The way you put pages together in a book is that you put it into InDesign and you tell it what parameters you want, and you press the button and it comes out all in pages. The way we did it back then is that the type came out in a big long sheet of paper, photo developed paper. It was shot, the light went through the machine, shot it onto photosensitive paper, you developed the paper, and made this big long roll of type. You then took that and pasted it with hot wax onto what we used to call flats, which were pieces of cardboard, thin cardboard with lines drawn on them to show where the lines of type should go. And you had a light shining from beneath that from a table. And so that showed you, you'd see the lines on the paper, and then you'd align your paper, and then you'd take an X-Acto knife and you'd cut your type into pieces and you'd position it down on the page. And that's how pages were done back in the days of back in those days. And those were the advanced days because we had a machine that did the wax. Before that, we were spraying the pages with what's it called? Rubber cement. Actually pasting it up with rubber cement. So anyway, we had this dancey thing. Prabhupada toured and saw this is this person, this is that person. Then the next morning he went on his walk as usual, and he said to Rameshwar Maharaj, who at that time was the BBT trustee in charge, said, in India I was dreaming about something like this. In India I was dreaming about something like this. And all the young people dedicated to turning out Krishna conscious books and artists doing paintings, and I was dreaming of something like this. I'd seen all the computers with the flashing lights. And all that. He said, now I think these 21 books, you are behind me, so I think you can do these 21 books in 2 months. In 2 months we were doing one book. And Prabhupada told him 21 books. So Rameshwar started to explain to Srila Prabhupada why this was impossible. And Prabhupada said that impossible was a word in a fool's dictionary. And then again, he told him that if you can't do it, what is the use of you? What is the use of you? Useless. So then Rameshwar, after the walk, went to Radhavallabha and they got together because he saw that Prabhupada was serious. And we then figured out how those books were going to be produced in 2 months. Which meant everyone working around the clock, and then bringing in some extra people. It meant all sorts of things, painters. It meant literally production managers pulling the paintings out of the artist's hands while they still were working on them. Just work. Pulling the paintings out of their hands because it had to be shot to meet a deadline. But it was done. And Prabhupada received the books in Vrindavan, and he was pleased. So it's said in Chaitanya Charitamrita that which is very difficult to do becomes easy to do if one remembers Lord Chaitanya. And what's very easy to do becomes very difficult to do if one forgets Lord Chaitanya. So when we remember Srila Prabhupada and remember his teachings and remember Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, then even impossible things become possible. Even the impossible things become possible. Even the smallest devotee can accomplish wonderful things. And otherwise, even the big men can't get anything done. By our own power, by our own exertions, by our own intelligence, what will we accomplish? And that was Prabhupada's poem also when he came here, that what can I do? And I'm just a beggar, what can I do here? But what is it that you can't do? You're the supreme mystic, you can make everything possible. And my Guru Maharaj's desire is very strong, Tarij Jabalavan. So by his desire also, these things become possible. Or these things, Prabhupada was explaining what those things are. That in every village, in every town, from one ocean to the other ocean, from village to village, everybody will chant Harinam, everyone will chant Hare Krishna. The people may be fallen, it may be Ugrastan. I may be a very small person, but when you desire, all of these things become possible. By the mercy of the spiritual master, all of these things become possible. So already it's astonishing how many wonderful things have been accomplished by Srila Prabhupada, for Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. I think that's the official title for today's program, Accessing Srila Prabhupada's Mercy. That was the official title we were given. Very, a little computer-esque title these days. You don't receive or get anything, you access everything. So, how to access? By determination, by courage, that all right, let me try for it. Prabhupada also used that expression, to try for it. Maybe successful or maybe a failure, but try for it. So, that mood, that determination and that enthusiasm also. Prabhupada said, I am not one to be easily discouraged. And so he pushed. There were so many discouragements. The governor's wife took the house where he was trying to develop the League of Devotees. And there were so many things in Prabhupada's career. The rascal at Juhu wanted to steal the land. There's practically a whole history of setbacks, anti-cult movements, deprogrammers, this, that. So many obstacles. Even Prabhupada told me one time, we were sitting on the veranda on the Lotus building in Mayapur. I was there with some other devotees, and Prabhupada said, anything good you want to do, he said, there will be so many difficulties. Anything good you want to do, there will be so many difficulties. It wasn't easy for Prabhupada, it's not that it was all hard, you know, he crossed the ocean and that was such an ordeal, and then after that it was all easy street. So many difficulties afterwards, in every corner. because his purpose was great. His purpose was great. But Prabhupada had that determination and was not a person to be discouraged. So similarly, somehow, here is the place. In America, in India, actually Calcutta is the place, because that's where Prabhupada appeared and that's where Prabhupada left from. So from one point of view, you say that for this 50th anniversary, Calcutta is really the place to focus. And for America, Boston. You know, not Seattle. or Cincinnati. There's so many other places. Prabhupada came here to Boston. So that gives special importance, even from the mundane point of view. If you have a newspaper article, if it's about something that happened on the other side of the country, the editor says, you know, what's this all about? But if it's about some local person or local event, then it's news. And it's news. Otherwise, it's not of importance to us. So somehow, this is the place. Everything Prabhupada did, his landing here and the subsequent history, is news in Boston. It's news everywhere. Prabhupada came to America. But it's especially news in Boston because this is the place where Prabhupada came. Commonwealth Pier in Boston. So you can take advantage of that fact. You can take advantage of Prabhupada's mercy. You could take advantage of your combined resources here and try to do something big, or try to do many big things. Make the biggest, not only splash, but serious impression. In South Africa, the head of our BBT is a devotee named Govardhan Prabhu, and he started something called the Bhaktivedanta Swami Lecture. And what that is that we book a prestigious venue at the leading university in Johannesburg, the leading city in South Africa. And we invite students and professors, leading people to come for a very serious presentation about Srila Prabhupada's contribution. So that the intelligent leaders can understand something about Prabhupada's contribution. And again, there's a lot of attention to detail. It's quite, for me, a disorganized person, amazing to see the plans that are made up, and they know exactly, like, who's going to be directing the cars so that they get to the right parking area as they come in, and you know, all the details are like assigned and thought of and assigned and worked out so that it comes off very well. And it's not enormous, it's not national news, but building up. Now this year I gave the first one, Devarmita Maharaj gave the second one, and devotee, disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Buddha Bhavana from London, is getting the third one coming up pretty soon, actually. So building up, to present that Srila Prabhupada deserves to be taken seriously, deserves to be paid attention to, as one of as for his unique contribution to human life, to spiritual thought, to spiritual philosophy, to practical spiritual development, to making people happy, to the contribution of literature and art even. So many things that Srila Prabhupada has done that deserve to be inspected. The author of Chaitanya Charitamrita says that if you're really serious, you should give attention to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You should interrogate it. You should examine it. If you're a philosopher, Prabhupada quoted another verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that essentially that the whatever your expertise, it should be dedicated to Uttama Shloka. It should be dedicated to the service of Krishna. So this Bhagavatam philosophy, there's nothing to compare to Srimad Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada made that his life work. So presenting Prabhupada doesn't mean just presenting, you know, this humble saint dressed in saffron who came in the old, elderly in his old age. But he brought with him this treasure of philosophy, of culture, of human development or revolutionizing the human spirit. And all of these things you can think about and think how to reach out high and wide to reach the leading people, the most important people, and to reach as many people. Not just the Indian consulate, but broadly, how many leading people should understand Prabhupada's contribution, and how many people from how many corners of Boston and Cambridge should be exposed to Srila Prabhupada's message. That's a good ending. Should we take questions, or you want to say something more, or somebody else want to say something, or where do we go?
Thank you for very inspiring lecture. I was wondering about reaching out to broader section of society, like non-Indian audience. This one maybe recent feedback that we got was that the lifestyle, like as a devotee or as an Indian that we lead, is unrelatable to, say, an average American student. So that creates, even the philosophy may be attractive.
Bunk is a good American term. It means nonsense. That our lifestyle is so unrelatable that nobody can really get it, and therefore we have to do something else, or we can't be successful. Not true. Not true. First of all, if you look at, I wrote an essay about this one time for Back to Godhead. If you look at all the stuff that we were doing back in the 1970s, all the things Prabhupada was saying, half of them are like, you know, back then, you're vegetarians? What do you eat? How do you get protein? I could never live on like boiled carrots and peas. It was like so, like, it was the next thing to being like, you know, as if we were whipping ourselves or starving ourselves. Or, and now it's like, everybody's like, if you're, yeah, like, I don't eat red meat. You know, or yeah, I'm vegan. I mean, it's like, everybody's, you're so, if you're not vegetarian, you're so uncool.
Thank you.
back in the old days, Prabhupada was, you know, four regulative principles, including no tea or coffee or cigarettes. It was like, yeah, cigarettes aren't so good, but you know, so you know, we don't take cigarettes. It's now like if you're smoking cigarettes, you're a pariah. They put you in a glass room in the airport with the others of your species. And let everybody else watch while you blow smoke at one another. Now, Prabhupada was completely, you know, 40 years ahead. How in tune, even if the hippies were our best customers, how in tune were we with them, saying, you know, no intoxicants, no coffee, tea, cigarettes, marijuana, LSD, cocaine, hashish, psilocybin, you know, none of those stuff. That was totally against the grain. No illicit sex. Tell a hippie no illicit sex. It's like telling a bird no chirping. It's their way of life. But Prabhupada didn't compromise. Apart from that, so many, maybe I'll go into this a little bit. You know, devotees in general, and Indians also sometimes think, you know, that this is like a strange thing and people are not going to buy this because they're Americans and this is so, you know, but so what becomes, so we have to find something, so what becomes popular? Kirtan. You know, well, we're looking for something to get people into somehow the neighborhood of, so that we can soften them up, so that they could maybe, what happens while around us? People go ape over kirtan. Actually, we have the best stuff. We have the best food, hands down. We have the best music, absolute best. We have the best philosophy. I just did this book on Ecclesiastes, and you know, just okay, these are very profound ideas you have, but you read Srimad Bhagavatam and it comes to a whole different level. Best philosophy. There was an article in the New York Times some years ago, because Fashion Street is always looking for some new angle. And what was really in that year was some designer who was dressing up his people in silk flowing robes for like $2,000. The Hare Krishna look. So, America's bankrupt. I shouldn't say that. They have something. They're not totally bankrupt, but they're poor. Their food is miserable. Their music is abominable. Food's abominable, too. Philosophically, they're anemic. Socially, oh my goodness. You know, they have no clue, and therefore they're miserable. You know, even like ordinary life, you know, the mama bear, the papa bear, the baby bear, that's beyond them. They can't even get that together because they're missing the most important thing. And I should say, for the benefit of those who are coming from Indian backgrounds, because lots of times I did a seminar on this in New Jersey, and there's so many reasons why Indian devotees think that they can't, you know, get out there. People will think that we're strange. People will think that it's only for Indians. People will not understand my accent. People will, I don't know what to say. You know, all of these things. But if you look at it, you're actually, like, we were a batch of hippies. You know, a batch of people with no assets, banging on people's doors or, you know, approaching them in the airport and asking them to take these unfamiliar books. The Indians are, number one, super educated. In this country, you know, it's like not all the villagers are coming to America to become neurosurgeons and IT workers. Highly educated, materially successful, the richest minority in the country. In every way, practically. You know, working for the biggest companies, holding solid positions. So you're in a prestige position. You're actually in the prestige position. You're not like, you know, some outsiders who are trying to get in. Plus, if people look for spiritual life, India's like still, India's got something. They don't know what the heck it is, but they know it's got something. Still, the Prabhupada also said that people, he quoted someone that if you have to look for spiritual life, you have to look for, and people do, still they're going to India to look for spiritual life. But people identify India as a spiritual place. You know, Venezuela is not seen as a great spiritual center. But India is. Just because you're Indian, they think you know something about it. You're authentic. When I used to live on the Lower East Side, I used to pass this little hole-in-the-wall kind of a store where the guy was selling wicker chairs and brassware and Brijbasi posters and stuff like that. And he used to sit on one of these wicker chairs and, you know, sit there. I was afraid to approach him. I thought he knew so much that I felt intimidated to ask him anything about anything. And he was just some bunya, you know, just some guy who's doing business on the street. But, you know, if a guy is Tibetan, you figure he knows more about Buddhism than you do, because he's Tibetan. The guy may know nothing about nothing, but you think he must know something more. Because you're Indian, you're looked at as an authority. And then if you actually know, as most Indians don't, they're totally confused. They can't explain why they're worshiping all of these gods and why they're doing all of these things. They have some very big mess of confused ideas. But if you actually know the science, then you're, whoa, it's like you're way out ahead. So be bold. Plus, America, one more thing. America has gone nuts for being multicultural. You know, if you're not white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, then they have to listen to you. Right? I mean, the universities are falling all over themselves looking for, you know, someone who's got Inca blood to round out the student body, or you know, American Indian at least, or, you know, if we can get a couple of people from Laos or something to, you know, they're totally into being multicultural. It's like a huge theme. We have to give you a hearing, we have to give you respect because you represent diversity. It's like the big thing that's in neon lights all over diversity. If you're anti-diversity, God help you. And people are actually recognize that other cultures have something to contribute, that America is all about people from different countries contributing to our wonderful society. So you have all of these things going for you. And if you just take courage and go out there and give it a try, you'll see wonderful results. It's not only that other Indians will say, yeah. But you take it to others, and some people will say no. And some people will say, you know, thank you, no, I'm Christian, blah, 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 blah. As they've always said to everybody, you know. But so many, you'll find the people who are interested or who are receptive or who are open-minded. And with all of those assets going for you. So if you've got it, leverage it. And you have it. Not to say that if you're not Indian, you don't have assets. Chinese is good.
Yes.
You have to end the
It may have been talked about before, but just in terms of motivation, why Boston? You know, this is a seed of transcendental philosophy. This is where Wordsworth and Thoreau and that sort of thing. So the ultimate transcendentalist comes is Prabhupada. And Beacon Hill is thought of as Brahmins. And so he's the ultimate Brahmin. So he's come, you know, to a place for a reason, because these seeds were planted, and he's expanding on these seeds. So we have to use what we have, which we have tremendous cultural heritage around this subject. And lots of people came here, very small little bits, but lots of people came here, and it's also really the foundation of the abolitionist movement. You know, this is where people came when the Civil War was going on. This is where the seed of idealism is really the root. And you talk about Nathaniel Hale, but really we came for religious freedom. That's why we established this country, because it wasn't possible to have any kind of other religion. And now all religions flourish. So there's lots of cultural and deep heritage. And I think you can tap into that by just thinking about the different religious. Just go to all the school heads of the theological departments and talk about this as a momentous occasion, and we can end talking to the city in terms of this is a really seminal event, you know, and that is your leverage right there. The heritage that pre-exists, and that there's amazing people that we can, you know, Khatil Gibran or Wordsworth or Emerson or Thoreau, or, and there's lots of them, in terms of the abolitionist movement too. So I just wanted to add that.
There is a publication which is in production that's supposed to represent the whole event globally. And it's already going to, it was supposed to be put out in about 5 or 6 different languages. And there was a big team of people working on it. And I think it will happen. Whether it will be in time for our event, I can't say, because it's supposed to be used for 2016, which is actually the 50th anniversary of ISKCON. Because that's the main thrust of the event. We're starting 2015, because that's when Prabhupada lands in America. But I believe that that material is supposed to be access, that somewhere on the internet soon. And there'll be then a hard copy by the end of the year.
But then you want big things, small things, you want something that's like about this big that you can, right?
Yeah,
or something where you can take this much text and put it on your website. So for that, I would suggest you get in touch with them there in Washington and start knocking on their door and making sound. And that's another thing, you know, the resources of elsewhere in America can be invested in Boston if you go searching for people to help you from elsewhere and say, hey, let's pull it into Boston. Work on that.
We have to end.
We have to end. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.